Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. Today is the 1st of June, 2013, here in Japan. It is still the 31st of May, 2013, back in the United States, where today I'm joined on the line by Laurette Lin of the Unplugged Mom website at unpluggedmom.com. People might remember Laurette from our previous conversation with her on Corbett Report Radio back in December of last year, where we talked to her about her book, Don't Do Drugs, Stay Out of School. Of course, more information about herself, her background, and her work can be found at unpluggedmom.com. Laurette Lin, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
I am very glad to be here, James. Thanks for having me back.
Well, I'm very glad to talk to you, and especially now that I find myself as a new parent. So I am basking in the joys of newfound parenthood, and of course also the responsibilities and everything that comes with that. And So this is a topic that I want to talk about today that I've been introduced to in recent years that I haven't put a lot of thought into before, which is the question of how we raise our children and what kind of effect that has on the society that we have at large. It's such a basic point that I think it goes over the heads of a lot of people, but there are still times in which this issue does crop up in our society, but unfortunately not in a very productive way. And I'm thinking specifically of every time that we see a story in the news about children or youth that act in troublesome ways, in violent ways. Something that comes up almost immediately as a knee-jerk type reaction among so much of the public is the idea that these children obviously didn't receive enough discipline as youth, and what is intended to be meant by the word discipline is evidently just violence, hitting children as a way of trying to get them basically to do what you want them to do. And unfortunately, I see this type of knee-jerk reaction over and over and over again, not only in online fora, but also in person. So this is an idea that's been very deeply ingrained in our society, to the extent where the idea that we don't need to hit our children in order to tell them what to do or in order to instill discipline is almost an alien concept for some people. It's a very big idea to start broaching this conversation, but why don't we talk a little bit about yourself and your background, as well as what you employ in your own household. When it comes to this word discipline, what does that word really mean for you, and how can that be inculcated without violence?
When I mean, if we're going to look at the actual definition of the word discipline, I think it would have a very different connotation to what comes to mind when we think of the word discipline. Or maybe it's the same thing, but I think most of us hear the word discipline and the images that come to mind are automatically some kind of violent reaction. And sometimes that involves physical hitting, or sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's just a matter of yelling or punishing or scolding. Some people have a more gentle approach, or they call it a more gentle approach, and they'll use the word timeout instead of punishing, or they'll use tap instead of hit. There are still, believe it or not, some cultures that exist today that do believe that hitting is the way to go, or they use the term switching, which I think is very specific. It's a particular tool that they use, or spanking, which in some cases they think might sound lighter, a lighter form, but it still is violence. So I think when we think about the word discipline, that's what we're thinking of. I don't really use the word myself. I don't find a need to use the word myself. I don't think it's a matter of controlling a child's discipline or through disciplinary action. I think that's what schools also use now. And even if they don't hit anymore in schools, they used to, but even if they don't do that anymore in schools, they still use some kind of encroachment upon a person's personal space and personal being, and they take away individuality. So I think it's important that we, first of all, define why we feel the need to even go that route. Like, what is discipline? It's a question that we must ask ourselves. And why do we feel that our children need to be disciplined? I don't think in my family we use that term, because it's not something that's important to us. It is not important to me as a parent to discipline my children. But that doesn't mean I'm not concerned about their behavior or their interactions with others in society.
Well, that's such an important point. I think that when we concede the idea that discipline is what we're after, I think we do concede some of the battleground to the people who want to use violence as a means of basically controlling children. And I think you're exactly right. If we see our role as parents to basically try to control the activities of our children until such time as they can become free and independent adults, in which case they should still do what we want them to do and act in the ways we want them to act. If we see that as the sort of outcome-based growing up or raising of our children, I think we have conceded that to the other side to a large extent. And it is important to understand, I think, that there has been a gradual shift in societal norms and what people basically accept, to the point where, of course, corporal punishment is no longer allowed in schools and things like this. We can see what I would tend to frame in terms of progress on a lot of these issues, but still that threshold of saying that we don't need to actually employ violence, or even the types of soft violence like timeouts that have become in vogue in recent years. Again, for people who are hearing this for the first time, how would you describe what it is that you do in terms of your parenting? What is it? What are you actually attempting to do if it's not discipline?
I have a relationship with my children. And that doesn't mean that we're on the same. A lot of people here have the relationship with the children and they think that it means that we're, I guess you can say partners. And I don't think that's completely accurate either, because we are their parents for a reason. Children are born children. They're born babies. And as you know, you have a 1-month-old son, and it's just a matter of recognizing that we are responsible for imparting our wisdom and imparting our experience and sharing that with the children to help them navigate the world and to help guide them. So there is a significant benefit to accepting that and embracing that as their parent and realizing that it's up to us to kind of help them have that safe experience through life until they do become adults. So that's okay. And I think we need to allow ourselves that. But there is a way to do that without using force, without using violence. And I think that's where the battleground starts to get a little bit fuzzy, because what we've done essentially is we've created this dichotomy, or this false dichotomy, if you will, where we either feel like we're completely hands off and we let the children do whatever they want and we don't interfere at all, or we're authoritarian parents. And that's not necessarily true. You can still be very much involved in your children's lives. You can still be that source of encouragement and that source of support, and even strongly encourage certain decisions or certain behaviors, or even to the point where we're protecting them from known dangers and even allowing some dangers to happen, allowing them to get hurt sometimes. But you don't have to be completely hands off. It can be a very peaceful environment. So the important point is to maintain a relationship with children. And that's what's important in my house. We have a relationship with each other. We have open communication. And the basis to every relationship, the very foundation of every relationship, whether it be with each other or with children, is communication. So I always make sure that I communicate with them. I never just say no because I said so. There's always a reason to back it up, because no matter how young they are still people and they deserve that. Now, when they're so young that they can't understand language, you wouldn't be saying no anyway. There wouldn't be any circumstance where you would really have to do that, unless it's something very simple. But even for children very young and they're going to touch something that might hurt them and you say, no, don't touch that. You say, because it's hot or because it's sharp, or no, don't go in the street because there are cars there, and you have a conversation. Then as they get older, they're used to that. And by the time they're teenagers and they're hopefully intelligent, well-rounded, respectful people, because they've been treated with respect all their lives, you're able to have a reasonable conversation with them. And when some incident comes up, because teenagers always want to explore and experiment, you don't have to say, no, you can't go out with those people, or no, you can't go out with that boy. You can simply discuss it and have a conversation and come to an agreement mutually together. So it really is all about relationships. I don't call what I do peaceful parenting. I just call it being alive and having a relationship with my children.
Well, that's a good perspective, because I don't think we should differentiate this and put it in a special category. It's simply should be parenting, I would say. But you raise a good point, because how can we expect children to grow up to be rational adult human beings if they've never been treated with rationality? How can they be respectful of others if they've never been treated with respect? And how can they grow up to be peaceful people if they're trying to be basically beat into submission? That cannot be the product, the end product. Well, there are people who escape their upbringings, but it's obviously much more difficult to do so if that's the only example that's been set. So, that raises to my mind the idea that parenting, to a large extent, is setting examples for children and treating them in the way that you would hope they would eventually learn to treat other people.
Exactly. It really depends a lot on who you are as a person. And we hear this over and over again, but I wonder how many of us really heed it and really understand it. Children want to be like their role models. And for a good portion of their lives, we are their role models. So they are going to mimic what they say, what they see, rather. So if we are treating other people with disrespect, if we're treating each other as couples with disrespect, if we are extraordinarily self-absorbed, or if we're extraordinarily mean or violent, they're going to mimic that behavior. If we are violent toward them, they're going to be violent toward us eventually. If we're disrespectful toward them, they're going to be disrespectful toward us. If we don't maintain open communication, we cannot expect them to communicate with us. The important thing to remember is that we can break the cycle. Many of us were raised in an environment where our parents did what was done to them, and then so they did it to us. And some of us experienced abuse, some of us experienced disciplinary violence, some of us experienced very closed relationships where parents didn't believe that they need to talk to their children. It was just about do it because I said to do it, and that's the end of it, and you have a role and you have chores. Now, if we can make a conscious effort to kind of forgive our parents and then move forward from that and do it differently with our kids, we have to also understand that there is no guarantee of the outcome. We can't say, well, I'm going to be super nice to my kids and everything's going to be perfect and peachy and they're going to grow up to be the savior of the world and they're just going to be this perfect, well-rounded person. That's still a way of us projecting our needs onto the kids and projecting ourselves. We can also say, well, I'm going to be really cool. I'm going to be the coolest mom. I'm going to be the coolest dad. And we're going to talk about everything. And look how cool I am. We're still projecting, because we're projecting our need to be cool. It's very hard to really take ourselves out of the equation and say it's about the child. Whatever may happen is going to happen. We have to do the best we could do to maintain a relationship and to kind of steer away from worrying about disciplining them, because we don't want to do social engineering. That's not what we're out for. We're not out for social engineering. This is something that I talk about that happens in the school system all the time. There is no corporal punishment in most schools. Unfortunately, it still occurs, but most schools do not allow corporal punishment anymore, but there is still an element of social engineering. That's what prison is all about. Prison is all about disciplinary action, social engineering. Has it worked? I can't say that the criminal justice system, especially here in the United States, is really such a wonderful thing, just like the school system is not really working to the children's benefit. So what we want to do is not worry about controlling or determining their behavior, but maintaining an open and honest, respectful relationship with our children. And that's okay to say, okay, this is not a good idea. I don't think you should do this. It's not a good idea. I really want to drive that point home, because a lot of parents, they go in one direction or the other direction, left or right. Every situation is unique. Every child is unique. There are going to be times as a parent where the child is headed in a dangerous direction, and you as an adult know this because you've been alive longer, and you will have to stop them, or you will have to correct some kind of inappropriate behavior. It's okay to do that. And there is a way to do that in a very respectful manner. I hope that makes sense.
It does. And I'd like to get into some of the brass tacks of how that can be done. But before we do so, you raise such an important point that I just want to stress for the listeners out there. When we talk about parenting, there is the tendency for that discussion to devolved to the point where the children are devoid of any agency or any individuality in that equation. It seems to be that it's all about the parent determining the outcome for the children, rather than the children being individuals who do have their own personal responsibility, their own choices to make in life. And of course, you are, as the parent, are there to try to set them up for the best possible outcome that they can achieve for their success in later life. But obviously, you can't determine that. And that's an important thing for people to keep in mind, because again, if we're looking towards that outcome base, if we're looking to socially engineer children so that we achieve a perfect product, then how does that make it any different fundamentally from the education system, which is attempting to basically mold children into pliable subjects for industrial capital or whatever the case may be? I think it's important for us to stress that each child is an individual, and we have to take that into account that children do have agency of their own. And I don't think a lot of people think about that when they think about parenting.
No, they don't. And I wonder what happened somewhere along the timeline that changed it and that corrupted parenting to such a degree. Now, I can't say that parenting was always perfect through every point in history, because we can really trace corporal punishment back as far back as we can go in history. It's not like we can take sole responsibility for ruining everything, but we can also trace this idea of relationship parenting back. It just depends upon the culture. It depends upon maybe the region. So there really are a lot of variations there. And I'm glad that it is being talked about so much in today's day and age. Like I said, I don't necessarily consider myself a peaceful parent, because there's always something about naming it to me that bothers me, because I feel like if we name it, then we automatically set up the opposite as the norm. So in other words, well, if we don't identify ourselves as peaceful parents, then we must be violent parents. And that's not necessarily true. It also sets up the other kind of parenting as the norm. So I think it's important that we start disassociating from that concept that we have to be different, that we have to be alternative in order to be recognized as peaceful or better parents. Because what we want to do is remind the world that this is normal, that having a peaceful relationship with your family and with your children is actually normal. It's healthy. A violent relationship is indicative of a dysfunctional relationship. That's born of a diseased relationship. It's not healthy. There's needs not being met on the part of the parent, and then that's imparted to the child, of course. So there's some kind of dysfunction going on there. It's an unhealthy relationship. A healthy relationship does never include violence. A healthy relationship doesn't include the excessive use of force. Those are not indicative of peaceful, healthy relationships to begin with. So they're actually not normal. They're not natural. They're not organic. Yes, they are prevalent. Yes, they are still going on, but they're not normal. So what we're actually doing when we say that we're peaceful parents, we're just really having a normal, healthy relationship with our family. We're not relying on violence. We're not relying on force, because we're embracing a very healthy relationship. That's not to say that there's no room for imperfection. We are human beings, and there are going to be times where we get frustrated. There are going to be times where our children get frustrated. We're going to argue. I would be lying if I said that there was never a raised voice in my household. There's arguing because we're different people, and there are personality conflicts, and this happens. Siblings bicker. This is what they do. Siblings have been bickering since the beginning of time, but it's also part of learning. It's our job as parents to try to find resolutions without using violence. I think a lot of people, too, they hear the term peaceful parenting, and they almost feel a little bit intimidated, because they feel like they suddenly have to become Buddhists, and they have to be very Zen, and everybody has to meditate together. That's not necessarily true. That might be true for some families. For my family, it's not. It's not who we are. James, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I'm just not a very quiet person. It's not my nature. I'm a loud person. Some people have called me even an obnoxious or audacious person. But that doesn't mean that I'm a violent person toward my children. We're a loud family. We're Italians. We're from New York. We're a loud family. This is how we communicate. But the point is that in our own unique way, we are communicating, and we do have a relationship, and we are not using violence, and we are not using force. Now, it can be said that I can say something as simple as, can you take out the garbage for me? And it's usually always a question. Honey, do me a favor, take out the garbage. I'm really busy. Can you do this favor for me? Or can you do me a favor and wash the dishes? It's always phrased like that. Always. I don't force it. It's just natural. That's how I talk to my children because that's how I talk to people. Can you do this for me? A lot of times they, because you know kids, I don't want to. I don't feel like it. Now I do say, come on, please. I really need you to do this. And I do harp on it. But it never comes to a situation where I say, do this or you're going to get spanked, or do this or you're going to get punished. If they're really adamant and they say, I really don't want to do this right now, I'm busy doing this, fine, I'll ask someone else or I'll do it myself. I do get a little irritated because I could appreciate the help around the house. But the point is that I do respect their right to say, I don't really want to do this right now. And that happens. That's a very, very simple situation, though. Take out the garbage, the dishes, whatever. There are other situations that are maybe different. There are variances. There's uniqueness. So I'm also not going to sit here and tell parents that you have to do it exactly that way, because there are a lot of different ways to ensure that your household runs harmoniously and smoothly without using violence.
I think it's good to differentiate this as some sort of system that can be implemented, that people need to adopt, because I think you're right. It has to be varying for varying different households, different situations, different children, and different parents. And there's no way you can give a prescription for that mix. But let's go over some of the situations that parents might find themselves in where they couldn't imagine dealing with it in any other way than, at the very least, for example, a timeout or something along those lines. For example, there's always the classic example of the child having a tantrum in the middle of the store. What can you possibly do other than to simply just physically remove them, whether they want it or not, or to put them in timeout or whatever that case may be? How can you do that while we're still respecting the child and what's happening to them at that point?
Okay, I'm going to deal with this in two parts. First of all, as far as respect, we have to make sure that we understand what we're talking about. Respecting the child also means making sure that they're safe. Respecting the child also means making sure that their physical, emotional, and intellectual needs are met. Sometimes they're going to reject that, and we as parents, it's our responsibility to make sure those needs are met. I do not believe that it is okay to let a child have a Snickers bar for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for a week straight, because that is not meeting their needs. That it's a very twisted version that gets put out there that says, well, it's their needs, it's their choice, they're 4 years old and they need to have a Snickers. They don't need to have a Snickers bar. They want. So we have to make sure that we create a distinction between wants and needs. If you're doing that, if you're allowing that, you're actually not meeting their needs at all, because they have physical health needs that deserve to be attended to. That's not saying you have to force them to eat broccoli if they don't like broccoli, but that is saying that it's time to have a conversation with that child about appropriate eating and why it could potentially be unhealthy. So first, there's that distinction. Let's deal with the exact situation that you brought up. Child is having a temper tantrum. There is a difference between having a temper tantrum in the privacy of your own home and having a temper tantrum in the middle of the store. You can't really just walk away from the child because they're in the middle of a store. You also can't put them in timeout, even if that's what you wanted to do, because where would you put them? In the store's dressing room? You can't do that. In those situations, sometimes it is necessary, because it is going to cause a social disruption, to pick the child up, remove them from the situation, get them into the car or get them into the parking lot, give them a chance to calm down. Now, I usually would never suggest just letting them run with it, because the child, if you let the temper tantrum go for long enough, they can get to a point where it's out of control. This is a learned thing. Self-control is a learned thing, and it's a necessary thing for life. We all do learn self-control because it benefits us in our life. Allow them some time to get it out of their system, and then it's appropriate to try to calm them down, but you can calm them down lovingly. Sometimes they need to be hugged. Sometimes they need to be touched. It's important not to try to reason with them until they're calm. Because just like adults, James, when we're upset, it's really hard to reason with us. I'm sure you've gotten into arguments with people where adults, where you're trying to have a logical, rational conversation, but they're so out of control that they can't hear you. Same thing with children. You have to let them calm down first. Once they're calm, I wouldn't ignore that. I would address it and say, you just behaved in a way that really was inappropriate because it's just not healthy. Not because it bothered the people in the store, not because it bothered me as your mother, because it's simply not healthy. It's not a healthy way to deal with conflict. It's not a healthy way to deal with not getting what you want. So let's talk about other ways that we could have achieved an outcome that was acceptable for both of us without engaging in that. And of course, you always lead by example. If as a parent, you're prone to temper tantrums, if you get into a fight with your spouse or your partner and you start flinging stuff around the house, that's a temper tantrum. The child is going to emulate that. So try to control your behavior and that'll reduce their temper tantrums. You can really do the same thing at home.
Well, exactly. I mean, it strikes me that so much of this is about avoiding that situation in the first place. I think there has to be a lot of work done, much more work done into avoiding those types of situations and the possibility for that than there is at that particular moment in time where things are out of control for a period of time. So I think prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure in every case, including this. So that's, I think, a very good response to the temper tantrum child. But as children grow up, obviously the nature of the problems start to change. And when we start dealing with, for example, teenagers that start rebelling and testing the limits of their freedom, what does that mean? What does that mean when children are making decisions that could be very detrimental to their health? And now they're becoming adults and are on the cusp of adulthood. So for example, looking at teenagers experimenting with drugs and experimenting with sex and all sorts of things like that. I mean, what's the role of the parent in those types of situations?
Well, we have to do the best we can do, like you said, to prevent those situations from coming about in the first place. And this question is really twofold because teenagers do have a natural tendency to rebel, but it does depend on their experience before they got to be teenagers. For example, children that spend their adolescence in a school environment, an indoctrinated environment where social engineering is being attempted on them every single day, where their force is being used on them every single day, they are not allowed to express their individuality when they're in school because this is a collective atmosphere. It's literally an environment that rewards and breeds collectivism. So they're actually not ever given that opportunity to really become themselves. And then they have adults like us telling them, well, you have to be unique. You have to be yourself. You have to shine. But they're spending the majority of their lives inside of this capsule that's telling them to sit down and shut up and be like everybody else. Now, add to that, when a child physically reaches 11, 12, 13 years old, the age of puberty, they're entering a phase in their life physically where their brain chemistry is literally changing and the hormones in their brain is changing. Everything is changing physiologically and physically. It's going to affect their emotions. It's going to affect their intellect. They're getting to a point where they want to start analyzing everything that they've previously learned. They're going to start questioning things. They're going to start looking for contradictions, and they're going to start challenging the information that they've received all through their lives because they're going to look for proof. They want to analyze it. They want to understand their world. This is the logic stage of their lives. This is the stage at which they are going to want everything to prove itself. So they're naturally going to go through that. Now, if you imagine a child that has not been in an indoctrinated environment and they've been allowed to develop themselves as a unique individual, when they enter this stage in their lives, it's going to be a lot more amicable and a lot less tragic so that they already have this relationship with their parents. They already know that they can come to their parents and say, I want to understand this better. I want to have a conversation about this. Maybe a 14-year-old and their parent can get into an argument. I know that right now my oldest is 11 years old, and we can get into a disagreement and we can get into an argument about things. She will disagree and she will say, you see it this way and I see it this way, and we can have this conversation. Whereas you have a teenager that is entering this phase in their lives from an indoctrinated point of view, and they have no idea how to communicate. They've never been taught how to communicate. They've never had that kind of relationship. They've never been allowed to express themselves. So it's going to manifest in different ways. Now they're going to just purposely be mean or aggressive or hostile. They're going to beat up other kids. They're going to hurt themselves. They don't know how to express the energy that they're feeling. Maybe they're going to cut themselves. Maybe they're going to start experimenting with sex because they like the attention. They like that it makes them feel good. People are giving them attention. Girls are giving boys attention. Boys are giving girls attention. And they say, well, they don't realize that their self-esteem is low. But it's a band-aid because they don't understand. They have no previous foundation on which to really understand relationships and communicate. Maybe they'll experiment with violence. Maybe they'll experiment with drugs. It's all just a manifestation of them seeking to understand their world. So it's like you said, James, it really all is in prevention, preventing them from getting to that place by establishing and forming a relationship with them and emphasizing the need to learn how to communicate openly and properly so that they can express themselves in an acceptable form and so that they can argue even in an appropriate manner. It's not about not arguing. It's about arguing appropriately. I hope that helps.
Yes, I think it does. I mean, it makes sense to me at any rate that, again, we can't expect that children are going to have a perfect life and they're never going to make any bad decisions. But I think it's the question of the environment that they've been steeped in and brought up in is going to determine a lot of how they deal with those situations when and if they arise. So I think you're exactly right about that. Well, let's turn to something that I can almost imagine that there will be people in the audience doing right now, which is taking a look back at their own childhood and their own affinity for their parents and the way that they were raised and saying, well, this sounds very different from the way I was raised and I turned out to be fine, so why can't I raise my children like this? And whether that be the justification for spanking or whatever it is, well, it worked on me and I'm going to do that for my children. What would you say to that type of mentality, that mindset that people have that they want to just basically normalize the type of situation that they had when they were children?
I think it's a self-validation tactic. I mean, I could say the same thing. I can't say with any honesty that I was hit very much as a child. I was hit sometimes, but I certainly wasn't abused. I did know children that were abused, that it would have crossed the line into physical abuse. I certainly wasn't abused, but I was hit several times in my life. My parents were not really hitters, but they were authoritarian insofar as I did get punished. I got grounded. I was prevented from going out to see my friends. I was told on several occasions, do what I say because I said so. And as a child, I never really liked that. Now, I can say that I turned out just fine, but there were a lot of things that happened to me in my childhood. And I can still say I turned out just fine, but really that is no measure of whether or not that was okay. A lot of people survive car crashes, but that doesn't mean that we should all go out and get in a car crash and that's going to make us better people. Another excuse is it builds character. But I wonder, aren't there healthier ways to build character than getting hit? There has to be. So I almost think that it's kind of a self-preservation and almost like a band-aid for themselves to be able to say, I don't want to look back on my old childhood. I don't want to look back on the hurt or the scars. So I'm just going to excuse it and say everything worked out fine with me. And that gives me the excuse to not have to put in the energy and effort to change that and do the same thing with my kids and just roll the dice and hope they turn out okay too. Look, we're rolling the dice no matter what we do. Because again, we can't control who they're going to become. All we could do is the best that we can possibly do to give them a healthy and positive environment to grow up in. So the first thing we need to do is look back at our childhood and say, yeah, okay, maybe I turned out okay. But the first question is, did I? And really examine yourself. Take a really hard look in the mirror and say, what could I really improve about myself? And how had my childhood affected that? What in my experience may have affected the shortcomings I have today. If I feel the need to control my child through violence, perhaps I'm not okay. Perhaps I didn't turn out okay, because you have to remember, again, violence is the product of an unhealthy relationship. People are projecting when they want to use violence. They're trying to assert some kind of power. So you have to really ask yourself, am I okay though? Really? Nobody is. Who's perfect? All of us have some kind of issue that we're dealing with. The important part is to get over our ego and get over ourselves and be able to say, okay, What are my shortcomings? How was my childhood? How has my childhood affected those shortcomings? And what can I do differently? Now, one thing that annoyed me when I was a child was just do it because I said so. I never liked that. I thought that was very disrespectful because out of one side of my parents' mouth, they were telling me that I was smart. And on the other side of their mouth, they're telling me, don't worry about it just because I said so. I felt like that was insulting my intelligence. Why don't I deserve an explanation? So I try never to do that with my children. I changed it. I didn't say, well, I turned out okay. I'm talking to you. I'm healthy. I'm fine. Clearly, I turned out okay. But I knew that it was wrong anyway. And I changed it and I'm implementing something different with my children. I did get hit a couple of times. I did turn out okay, but that doesn't mean that the hitting was okay. And I don't hit my children because they may turn out okay, but the end doesn't justify the means.
That's an excellent response. That's exactly, I think, what the way that we need to look at it. And you're exactly right. We might survive a car crash, but that doesn't mean we're going to go out and get into them on purpose or just say that it was all okay because we ended up healing from it. Okay, excellent. Well, there's so much more to talk about, but we have many, many years to talk about it, I hope, in the future. So I hope we can have you back on to talk about these types of issues and more things that will arise. But in the meantime, perhaps for people who are listening to this and maybe hearing some of these ideas for the first time who are interested in exploring this more, perhaps you can talk about some of the resources that you have or resources you'd like to direct people to online for more information.
You know, I don't really talk about peaceful parenting or attachment parenting per se, but we do talk about parenting a lot on Unplugged Mom Radio, and you can listen to that on unpluggedmom.com and thelivingfreeproject.com. There are also a lot of blog posts on there that, like I said, we don't name it attachment parenting or peaceful parenting, but because the authors that contribute and because I am the host of the radio show Unplugged Mom Radio, this is something that we practice anyway. It sort of gets weaved into the conversations we have about parenting. So we also provide other resources and we direct people toward books that we find very useful and helpful. So I would just advise people to check out unpluggedmom.com to listen to the podcast. Any of the ones on parenting would be along these lines, and thelivingfreeproject.com or just livingfreeproject.com.
Excellent. Well, I'll include both of those links in the show notes for this interview. So once again, Loretta, it's a pleasure talking to you. I hope we can have you on many times in the future to continue exploring parenting subjects.
Yeah, that'd be great. I love joining you, James, so sure.
Right. Thank you.